compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I'm your Huckleberry. Patrick Madrid here, trying to do my best Doc Holliday impersonation. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. In a moment.
Isn't that a daisy?
You're a daisy if you do. In a minute, I'm going to get into some updates with you about the location-based apps scandal that brought down one of the high-ranking figures at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. It's a sordid story, and it's unpleasant. I agree with you, and it's not something that I'm sure you or I want to really delve too deeply into, but there's some aspects of the story that are developing that I want to bring to your attention, and I'll do that here in just a minute. We do have people who have been holding, however, since before the program began, so we'll do a couple phone calls and then get into those details. If you'd like to be on the program, maybe you have a question or a comment, maybe you need a second opinion, maybe you have an apologetics question, whatever it may be, the number to dial is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We'll start off with Lee in Kentucky. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am considering quitting my job, a job that I love very much. Mm-hmm. I work at a college with performing arts students, and there are several things that I believe may make me someone who is cooperating with evil.
Okay.
So I do the advertising for our plays, and one of them this year is a romantic romance, a love story between two people of the same sex.
Okay.
And two of our students who are acting in the play will have to kiss each other. I've probably said enough.
Mm-hmm.
This, along with the fact that I am encouraged to affirm various gender identities, along with the fact that I would be advertising this play, have me wondering if I could be cooperating with evil.
Your conscience is functioning very well, Lee. So kudos to you for that. A lot of people wouldn't give it a second thought. So first of all, I admire you for thinking about this way. It shows that your conscience is working. That's great. And at first glance, just based upon what you've told me, I would concur with you that if you were to do this to, you know, promote it to, what all do you have to do besides promote it? Do they want you to act in it, or what do they want you to do?
No. So I don't have to act in it, but essentially I am the head of publicity for the play.
I see. Okay. So two girls having a romance or two guys having a romance, and it's obviously promoting something or depicting something, portraying something that would be, objectively speaking, immoral. So to promote that, I would concur with you, would be to cooperate in that evil. And I can imagine that that's probably bringing up other questions like, well, where will I get another job and things of that nature. Thankfully, the job market is really good for people who are looking for work right now. I don't know if you've looked into that, but it's favorable in many respects. I don't know how that is in your field, but I would think you would probably have an easy time getting another job if you wanted to.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And keep me in your prayers.
I certainly will. Would you mind giving me a call back after things, you know, end up however they end up, and when you make your decision, and just let me know how things go?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and be thinking about what you will say to them, you know, when you say, I can't do this, I can't go for that, as Hall & Oates would say, I can't do that. And they may say, or they will say, well, why not? Why wouldn't you be able to do that? And then to be able to explain to them why you can't do it, just think of it as in a moment of evangelization. When you can actually evangelize somebody, tell them the truth. Now, chances are they're not going to be too friendly to that, but at least they will have heard it from somebody. I think that's a good thing.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And again, I'll definitely need your prayers for me to be brave and do that. So
I promise you my prayers. I promise you, beginning today.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome, Lee. Okay. Thank you. Hang in there. Yeah, people are faced with all kinds of dilemmas like this. You're a pharmacist, and you have a great business. I knew a guy who was a pharmacist, and he had a great business. He had a thriving pharmacy, and he was making lots and lots and lots of money. And he kept finding himself in these moral quandaries where people wanted to buy contraception from him, or the local doctor referred the woman in for a prescription that involved the pill. And he couldn't do it. He said, I wouldn't do it. So he just simply completely divested his pharmacy from anything associated with contraception. No condoms, no pills, no prescriptions, nothing. And people, you know, they tried to grind on him and make him do this, and he wouldn't do it. He said, I would sooner go out of business than to do that. I don't want to cooperate in evil. And it was difficult for him at times. Eventually, he sold the pharmacy, and I don't know whether the person who bought the pharmacy wound up reintroducing the contraceptives, but for all the time, all those years that he, this Catholic guy, had this pharmacy, he just refused to have any participation in contraception. And you know what? He has a clear conscience. He can look back late in life now. He's not that old, but I mean, late in life, he's you know, getting up there. He can look back with a clear conscience and never have to say, oh, if only I hadn't done that. I wish I hadn't done that. If only I had, you know, taken a stand. And he did that from the beginning, and he just realized this is the only way I can do this. And he's happier for it. And by the way, when you get to your heavenly interview, your exit interview, as I call it, before you go to heaven, these are the kinds of things that are going to come up. Not how much money did you make. Hey, let's take a look at the books for the pharmacy that you had. Let's see how much money. Let's see how successful you were. That's not going to come up. But, oh, I see here that you were participating in the wanton destruction of human life through abortion. Let's talk about that. Those kinds of things will definitely come up. 888-914-9149. Now to Philadelphia to talk to Marge. Good morning, Marge.
Good morning, Patrick. I wonder, what is your opinion on teenagers getting
that? You know what, Marge? Forgive me, but your phone is making you unintelligible. Cyrus will get on with you, or Jim will get on with you and see if we can't get that sorted out. And I'll come back to you. I want to hear your question, but I just can't make it out. Let's go now to Margaret in Chicago. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Patrick. I wanted to get your advice or opinion on how to deal with individuals, close friends, neighbors who are attacking my family for being unvaccinated.
And how are they doing that?
Well, one wrote a column in the local newspaper.
About you?
The other one,
about your family?
Friend,
by name?
Yeah. No, but described this pretty well. And then close friends over 25 years basically moved away from me and then pointed her finger and just scolded me till I left in tears.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just last week. And I'm looking like, okay, these are people who are neighbors, friends, who are attacking like this, not even looking at me as an individual person, a friend, a neighbor. It just seems like the rhetoric and the anger is accelerating.
Okay. I can imagine that this must be very painful, because you've known, at least in the case of the friends, for 25 years, you've known them a long time. You have a friendship with them. You thought they were your friends. And now so quickly you find out that they've turned on you for something that petty, that shallow. And I could understand why that would hurt you. And I could understand why, certainly, if somebody's writing a column about you, that's very vindictive and petty on their part. Did you ever watch much of The Twilight Zone by chance, Marge?
Yeah.
Or Margaret, forgive me.
A long time ago, yeah.
There was an episode that was called The Shelter. It was about a bomb shelter in suburbia. Does that ring any bells? You want me to tell you about that episode?
No, I have not. I don't remember okay. that episode.
I would encourage you to watch it. You know, you can plunk down and, you know, I'm sure you could find it on one of the platforms like Amazon Prime, perhaps, or maybe you could find it even on YouTube, perhaps. But the essence of the story is this, that there's a dinner party among old friends and neighbors who have known each other for years. They live in the same neighborhood on the same street, having a great time. And a news bulletin comes out that there is a nuclear attack imminent. And so everybody's stunned. What are we going to do? It looks as though the Russians are about to blow us up. And all the different people, they sort of scatter to their homes. And the main couple, they have dug a bomb shelter. And they have a bomb shelter, kind of a subterranean bomb shelter in their backyard. And they have it fully stocked. It's got everything in it to survive a nuclear attack and then some. And the neighbors find out about this. Some apparently knew about it, but the others find out about it. And the couple and their kids, it's just like two kids. They are in their bomb shelter and they won't let anyone in. And it's so amazing to see how quickly, absolutely turning on a dime, these long-standing, seemingly close friendships can be shredded over something like this. So it gets really ugly, and it gets to the point of, you know, basically violence, where they're trying to keep their neighbors out because they want the bomb shelter to themselves. The neighbors are trying to get in. And then when it's all said and done and they've just sort of lacerated each other, then a news bulletin comes on and says that there is no danger for a nuclear attack. It's not going to happen. It was a false alarm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what happened there, Margaret, is that the people learned a lot about themselves, to say the least, and they also learned a lot about their friendship, which wasn't really much of a friendship when you got right down to it. So yeah. The reason I mention that, because you're going through something similar here, and you've learned now how shallow and petty and selfish these people are. Now, in their defense, they would say, no, Margaret is the one who's being petty. Margaret is the one who's being selfish because she's not getting vaccinated and we are the ones who are put at risk. Well, you can point out to them, look, if you're vaccinated, then you don't have any risk from me. Now, I know that there's dispute about that. And what about people who are vaccinated getting COVID? The fact is that they have placed this above their desire to be a friend with you. They have placed this desire for safety on their part. And hey, we all desire to be safe. I do. I want to be safe, just like you. But they've placed that good above the good of your friendship. And it doesn't sound as though they took any effort to try to understand your position. They just simply scorned you and attacked you, right? They didn't say, hey, can you explain this to me? And they didn't walk through it with you, I guess, did they?
No.
Okay.
Opposite.
Right. So in the midst of the pain and the betrayal, you now have gained something. There's a silver lining here, and that is, you know, you realize now you don't need to waste any more time with those people because they're not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And you now have seen them for who they really are. And that saves you time and energy. You can invest that in somebody who can be a real friend for you. Now, if it so happens that at some point you decide to get the vaccine, and it may get to the point where it becomes so onerous for people who haven't gotten the vaccine that you'll just give in and get it. I don't know how that will play out, but for some people, that's what will happen. And if you happen to see these people and they find out that you've been vaccinated, won't it be interesting to see how they try to react in that case? Like they'll try to reel you back in maybe as a friend? I have a feeling the damage is done. It's probably too late.
Yeah. Yeah, and our house has already had COVID, so we do have natural immunity, and that still would not hold. It's vaccinated or not. Mm-hmm. We don't care for whatever reason you have. It's not valid.
Right. For some people, and maybe these are those kind of people, this has reached a religious fervor for them, and for them, the vaccine is kind of a sacrament to them. And if you haven't been initiated with that sacrament, and I'm using the word advisedly, then you are on the outside. And worse, because you're to be scorned and demeaned and have columns written about you in a thinly veiled way in the local newspaper. I mean, that's just petty vindictiveness to do that. Remember how I talked about yesterday about the danger of scapegoating people and how when you have this, as President Biden referred to, two Americas, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, you know, this is the kind of thing that happens in human interactions where if a target is identified, whether it's an individual or a group of people, and they're ostracized and then they're scapegoated, that's how you get to things like Auschwitz eventually. Now, I'm not suggesting that's happening here, but these are the seeds of that kind of atrocity down the road if it should continue in that direction without cooler heads prevailing. So My heart goes out to you. But I really want to emphasize the fact that I think the favor, the upside, the silver lining for you is you now know that these were not really your friends. And you can move on from them.
Yes. I agree. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for everything you do.
You are most welcome. I mean, I'm here to try to offer some hope and encouragement. I realize this is a difficult time for you. So the best I can say at this point is just keep moving forward. You know, give serious thought to the vaccine. I encourage people to not be cavalier about this issue. And don't let fear or the concern about microchips or things like that, don't let it prevent you from doing something that would be medically legitimate. And I don't know what your reasons are, and I don't need to know what they are. You know, I respect you for making your own decisions, but I would encourage you give serious thought to this so that at the very least, you know, this is one less hassle you have to deal with if you decide to get the vaccine.
Okay. Thank you. Well noted.
Okay. Final question, if you don't mind, okay. Margaret. Do you have any good friends, true blue friends that you can lean on right now? Besides me, of course.
Yeah,
I'm always here for you.
I do. And that's why it was sort of shocking, because I have a lot of dear good friends that are fully vaccinated and they know that I'm not, and never did I receive treatment like this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, then they're your real friends, aren't they?
Yes. It just was shocking that this happened in 1 week, and it was just very toxic and alarming and just worrisome.
Yeah. 60 years ago.
Where this is all heading.
60 years ago, Margaret, your story was told in that Twilight Zone episode. But instead of a vaccine, it was an air raid siren. But watch that. If you get a chance, watch. It's called The Shelter. And I just looked it up. It's episode 68. It came out in 1961. Almost exactly 60 years ago, your story was told on TV. And it's amazing, the parallels. Thank you, Margaret. Hang in there. I'm here for you every day. I'll be right back with more of The Patrick Madrid Show right after this.
Relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
In light of the call you just heard about the lady whose friends turned on her and castigated her and ostracized her and shamed her for not getting the vaccine, it's interesting to look at some data from a new survey. This is from AmericanSurveyCenter.org. Nearly 50% of Americans now say they have fewer than 4 close friendships. In 1990, only 27% said that. So here's the breakdown. So the number of close friendships that Americans have declined over the past several decades. But this is the percentage of Americans who say they have the following number of close friends, not counting their relatives. So in 2021, the number of people, these are percentages here, who said they had no friends is 12%. Zero friends, nobody, nada. or nadie, as the case would be. In 1990, only 3% of the people polled said they had no friends. People who said they had one friend in 2021, 7%, compared to 4% in 1990. Not that big of a change. But where you really see a big change, people who say that they have 10 or more friends in 2021, only 13%, whereas in 1990, 33% said that they had 10 or more friends. I have way more than 10 friends. I mean, to me, to have 10 friends, that doesn't seem like all that big of a deal, but that's where the survey ends up. That's the highest tier is 10 friends. So I'm not saying that anybody is doing better or worse if they have more or less than 10 friends. And I guess it, too, would depend upon how you interpret or how you define the word friend. You know, that would have a lot to do with it as well. Somebody who's very close to you that you can share specific personal things with, and somebody you know is going to be there to listen to you and not abandon you if you maybe don't see eye to eye on a particular issue. I think I can say I've got more than 10 friends, not counting my wife, obviously, and not counting my adult children, but just people I know. And I would think that would be fairly common. But it's remarkable to me to see how many people and how it has increased in the number of people from 1990 to today who say that they have no friends. So there's that. Cyrus, if you could retweet that, that would be great. Let people take a look at those data points. 888-914-9149. Let's see if we can get Marge back now in Philadelphia. Good morning, Marge.
Hi, Patrick. I'd like to know your opinion on teenagers getting the vaccine.
Well, my opinion doesn't really amount to much by way of, you know, my opinion's not important. But what I have read in the literature that I'm trying to keep abreast of on a constant basis seems to indicate that, at least with the first version of COVID-19, that teenagers and children didn't need to get it, didn't need to get the vaccine because it was not affecting them. And in the few cases where it did affect them, it was not lethal. It was not as serious as it was for many adults. Now, with the Delta variant and the Lambda variant and the other ones that are coming up, that's where I don't know exactly what the results indicate scientifically. I am troubled, though, by some of the things I'm hearing from, let's say, the governor of California and others suggesting that children, even all the way down to the age of 2, should be vaccinated. I'm seeing some of those things right now, and I don't understand why that would be so so necessary. Doesn't seem necessary at this point. But as I say, my opinion on this issue is just my opinion, nothing more. But I would refer you to, for example, the National Catholic Bioethics Center, ncbcenter.org is their website. And they have a great deal of information about this issue and the scientific data about age groups. And
here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, right. Right down the street from you. There's also the Charlotte.
Exactly.
There's also the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and they're easy to find online as well. And they, too, are a repository of information about these things, and they're trustworthy and pro-life.
Okay. All right, that sounds very good. Thanks for your help.
Okay, you're most welcome. Thank you, Marge. Let's go now to Meg in Bloomington, Minnesota. Good morning, Meg.
Good morning. Just a quick comment. You know, we are living in what many are calling the cancel culture right now. And in regard to Margaret's call, her friends canceled her friendship because she wasn't vaccinated. And the thing that I would like to add to your comments for Margaret is to encourage her to pray for these people, because clearly they need to learn about friendship. And instead of her canceling her friendship with them as they did to her, as Christians, I believe we're just called to remain friends as much as makes sense, you know, but at the same time, continue to really pray for them. As, and, you know, Jesus encourages us to pray for our enemies.
I agree with that. Maybe where I might disagree, and it would depend, of course, on how you define the word friend, Meg, but if by friend you mean to return to how things were before, let's get together for dinner or barbecue or something, I don't know that it can go back to the way it was before. That's what I would assume. It would probably be nigh impossible to do that. But maybe by friend you mean being friendly to them. If that's the case, then I can see that. But
or at least just be praying, and then honestly, even be praying like if they would ever get to a point where they would maybe see the error of their ways and apologize, and there could be the mending of the friendship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I just don't want this cancel culture to. It kind of feels like tit for tat almost. Like, let's, you know, if those are people that you enjoy spending time with, etc. Obviously, they've turned on her. They've canceled mm-hmm. her out. But as long as she continues to pray for them, that's how she can be a friend to them. Not necessarily being in good, you know, relationship with them, but still greet them if she sees them, and you know, that kind of thing. And
mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you said, not invite them for dinner or picnics, etc., barbecues, whatever.
And you know what? You're echoing. I agree with you because you're echoing what Jesus said. He says, "Love your enemies and do good to those who persecute you." And so, even if it's something as simple as just being friendly, they sheepishly say hello, and you say hello back. I mean, I do agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, and that was it. I just wanted to encourage her to try to stay that course.
Have you ever gone through that, Meg, personally? Have you ever had to deal with that?
Yeah. Yes. And I actually mm-hmm. had an experience yesterday. I walked into a shoe repair shop to get a shoe repaired, and big sign on the front, mask required. And I don't carry one with me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I just opened the door and walked in the doorway, and he looked at me and I said, "I don't have a mask." And his reaction, it wasn't anger. It was more like, indignant. And I just said, "Well, what do you want me to do?" And he just said, "Well, stay where you are." He came over to where I was. He just kept talking and talking and talking about his fear and mm-hmm. of all of these different things. And I just stood and listened because I kept thinking, I have things I could say, but I just started praying for him. And pretty soon he calmed down and he came over and he took the shoes and looked at him and told me how he was going to deal with it when I could pick them up. And then before I left, he finally said something like, "Well, thank you. I've been attacked by people for coming, you know, for asking mm-hmm. them to wear a mask." And I just thought, that's another example mm-hmm. of, you know, people want to lash out because it's frustrating, and I just think how Christ would just go, absorb as much as you can. Mm-hmm. Obviously, don't take attack, you know, too much. But I was just glad that I stayed quiet because he ended up being able to take my shoes so he could fix them.
Mm-hmm. And he probably now sees you as a friendly. You're one of the good guys in his eyes.
Yeah.
So he sees
promised
that
when
you...
I came to pick up the shoe, I'd have a mask.
He sees you. I would guess he sees you now as somebody who's normal and cool. You know, this is not a religion for you, and you're not going to get up in arms. And well, that's good. Yeah. That's a good example.
We try, don't we?
Yeah.
And thank you for your radio show. Really, I've learned a ton, and it does encourage all of us to stay the course.
Thank you. Well, with people like you who are out there doing good things and leading by example, you know, that's a great way for people to learn how to do it when they're in that situation. I'm glad you brought that up, Meg.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Well, I got to go into work.
Good talking to you. Thanks a lot, and I hope you have a great day. Let's go to Janet in Aurora, Illinois now. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Patrick. I just have a comment to encourage married couples and engaged couples to embrace the church's teaching on natural mm-hmm. family planning. The last program that was on prior to you had an archbishop that was encouraging the embracing of natural family planning because it's mm-hmm. this month, I guess, and I didn't know that. I'm very happy to see that. I think that this world needs really leadership in this regard. So much has changed since, I don't know, the early 60s. We got married in 1968 in the middle of August, and we were both
almost
Catholic,
exactly when almost exactly when Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae came out.
That's right.
Interesting coincidence.
And we, yes, and we read it before we were married because there was so much news speculation that he was going to not keep the teaching the same because it was the beginning of the pill widely. And there was all kinds of speculations. So anyway, we thought we needed a clarification and we thought this was going to be it. So we each got our copy and we each studied it separately and then discussed it. And we definitely wanted to be a Catholic couple and we felt that this was definitive. And so we embraced natural family planning as best we knew how, which at that time was pretty limited. But we did find an organization that would help couples from Ohio. It was Couple to Couple League. And
Janet, if you don't mind, how would you summarize the point you want to make into, I don't know, a sentence or two?
Oh, all right. Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. I would summarize it as it helps each person in the marriage acknowledge God more because he's got the plan. And each person, husband and wife, have to take responsibility for themselves because they're both free and to be the gift to each other. And you communicate your goals and expectations for the time that you're in. And you both know and you both get it.
Right.
It's not.
And your marriage
easy.
Is stronger for it, right? Because you have placed God at the center of your marriage and you're seeking his will, but you're being prudent if you determine that there is a time, whether because of health or finances or some other just cause, you determine that right now is not the time to conceive, and God has provided the means by avoiding conception for a time because of the natural cycle of the woman. So you're not making use of the good of marriage that you otherwise could make use of if you wanted to, and you're cooperating with God by fasting, so to speak, from something that you would otherwise enjoy until the time comes when fertility is not really an issue. For those who may not be as familiar with what you're saying. What kind of witness was that for your friends, maybe other couples who were married around the same time that you were? Did you get any pushback from them? Did you win any of them over to the idea of NFP? How did that go?
It was difficult because we did have friends that did have children with NFP, and we did teach NFP some. And so that was very fulfilling.
I guess what I mean is, did anyone ever say to you, hey, you know, we want to try that too, and then it worked out well for them?
No, not really specifically. We were very busy because we did have children in the beginning of our marriage. But as the kids grew up and,
I understand. Nancy and I, same situation. We got married and 9 months and 2 weeks later, we had our first child. I understand. And then like clockwork, you know, God bless us with more and more children. So yeah, I understand busy. Thank you, Janet. God bless you. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. At the intersection of faith and culture, The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
If you've been watching Better Call Saul, chances are you're waiting for season 6 to come out. And I was unhappily surprised to see the news yesterday evening that actor Bob Odenkirk, who plays Slippin' Jimmy on Better Call Saul, that he collapsed on the set yesterday. He was rushed to a hospital. They haven't released yet what the cause of his collapse was and what kind of condition he's in. They haven't said anything. He's still in the hospital. And they were in the middle of filming that sixth and final season that's going to air. I assume it's going to air next year. But in any case, in your kindness, maybe remember him in your prayers. So we don't know yet what happened, but hopefully he'll pull through. 888-914-9149. Let's go to John in Clearwater, Florida. Hi, John.
Patrick, my niece, my wife's side of the family, is a lesbian who about 18 months ago married another woman. And I respectfully declined to go to the ceremony. And my wife is not Catholic. My wife is an ex-Catholic. And my wife's side of the family are Protestant. So they didn't think this was a big deal, but I did. And I took some heat for it. They said, you know, you missed a wedding and whatever. Well, now they had a twin boys. And one of the boys is, there's something wrong with his head or something. And you know, everybody wants to go there and offer their condolences. And I tell my wife, look, I really feel badly for the little boy. You know, God bless him, but I can't go. I just cannot be involved in this. And I am taking, quite a bit of pushback from even my children who are Catholic, who, dad, they're, this is, anyway, it's just so acceptable to everybody. And I feel I'm just such a, I don't want to be a jerk about it, but I cannot, I just cannot be involved in it. It's just, to me, it's really creepy. I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but it just is.
So let's analyze that. What is it that they want you to do? They want you to express concern for the child? They want you to go visit the child? I mean, what is it that they want?
Go visit, yeah. I've expressed concern, and I said I pray for the little boy. But I can't go there. I can't hold their hand during, I just can't. I don't want to be involved in it. I'll pray for the kids, but I really don't want to be involved. And they want me to be involved like this was just a regular old family and come on and, you know, loving family things. You got to support them and be there for them. And I don't know.
Okay, let me ask you a question, John. What if instead of the scenario that you just described to me, the niece who's a lesbian, she gets married, in vitro fertilization, etc. What if your niece had been impregnated by rape? And so the child born to her, through no fault of his own, was conceived in rape. And it was a terrible, vile act that was perpetrated against her, and yet she chose life and had the baby. Would you refrain from going to see that child if he were sick in the hospital?
I don't know. I know I certainly wouldn't hold any animus against the child, and I don't against her two boys. They didn't do anything. They just, they were conceived. God, wants them here on the earth. And I don't know, Patrick. I really
isn't
don't.
That enough, though? In other words, wouldn't that be enough to say I can go and comfort somebody? It's not his fault that he came into this world the way he did. It's, and your comforting him in the hospital would not be an endorsement of his mother's lifestyle.
Right. Yes. I'm sorry. He's home now. He had surgery.
Oh,
he's
I
home
see.
Now, and it's really not
okay.
Going to the hospital. It's visiting the house and girlfriend my condolence, to the mom or whatever the hell.
I mean, I know it's easy to say, here's what I would do, and I don't have all of the family relationships in my mind that you have, and you know where all the fault lines are and all that, and I don't know those things, but On the face of it, though, I could easily picture myself going and going to visit this child and, you know, bring him a present or something to cheer him up.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Okay.
I don't see a downside for you in doing that. I only see upside. What's the downside?
Yeah. I just don't care to be involved with these two ladies. I just don't. They're mm-hmm. so in your face with, you know, they had this huge wedding. Both wore white wedding gowns, and they're very, very much where I have to accept that their lifestyle is normal. It's not that they're just very in your face about it. You know, mm-hmm. both of them, they're vocal and mm-hmm. send out photographs all the time of them and their honeymoon pictures. And they want me to be very much accepting that they are two people in love, and this is a perfectly normal, natural relationship.
I understand. They want you to sign off on it and approve of it, or at the very least, don't disapprove of it. All I'm saying is, and you know, I'm not here to change your mind. I'm just bringing something up since you asked my opinion. I don't see any, I don't see any problem with going to their house. That in itself may be uncomfortable, but you're going there for a reason. You're going there to do something nice for a kid who's sick. That seems to me to transcend the other problem, and you would right. know that you're not endorsing that. If that's how they want to interpret it, that's up to them. But you're not doing anything okay, to endorse it. You're just simply being a good person. You're being a compassionate, good okay. person, seems to me.
Okay. All right, thank you. It's a good point. I've got one more quick thing. I used Natural Family Planning. My wife and I did. I'm 75 now, and we had seven children. But
congratulations.
We wanted, well, thank you. Towards the end, the last two, we really desperately wanted them. So it was something that I felt really, really made our life much more, the closest between my wife and I during those years when we were using NFP.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the first couple of years, my wife was on the pill and then she used a diaphragm after that. But after the second child, we said, hey, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. We got to get God's plan. Let's live it. And we did it. And thank goodness because of, you know, boy, am I blessed.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
How many total kids did you have, John?
We had seven children. Unfortunately,
oh, you said that. That's
we
right.
lost the last two. Yeah, we lost the last two. Mm-hmm. So I have five surviving children, and they are the absolute joy of my life. They're wonderful.
I can imagine. Well, God has yep. surely blessed you and your wife, John. That's great. Well, congratulations on that. I'm glad you and I had a chance to talk today. Thanks for calling in. And I hope that there's a peaceful resolution of this other issue. My guess is that if you go and visit the child and do something compassionate like that, you're going to feel better about yourself. And that's not a bad thing. You know, knowing that you reached out to try to do something, even though it was inconvenient or difficult for you, that you did it anyway, I think in retrospect, you'll probably be glad you did, if you decide to do that. Thanks, John. 888-914-9149. Now, I promised that we would look at some of these details of the location data from apps, like these hookup apps. And... the background of the story, as you may remember, is that the news organization called The Pillar, and all, as you would expect, all of the screamers on the left, all of the far left fringy people, including a lot of far left Catholics, you know, they're now just trying to denigrate this organization as just a newsletter because it's on Substack, and Substack is a newsletter platform. So they're trying to diminish the importance of this story, but it's a huge story with very serious implications for who knows how many people. And to give you kind of a backdrop here, as you may remember last week when the story broke, I shared it with you that The Pillar, which is the organization in question here, they had been using, or they had acquired legally, of course, the details of these apps that provide location data. So these hookup apps. And there are a variety of different ones. One in particular that is specifically and basically only for homosexual men. And they use this to triangulate with the publicly available, legally obtainable data from the cell phone services to be able to de-anonymize the information and then determine with high precision, high exactitude, the whereabouts, the location of that phone on the basis of the details that are given by the hookup app and the phone data, et cetera, and they put together this dossier showing that this Monsignor, who worked at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops until just last week when he resigned all of a sudden because of the story, that for the better part of 3 years, for long stretches of time, nearly on a daily basis, the allegation is that he was allegedly using this app sometimes more than once a day, but at least every day for long stretches of time, while working on company time, while allegedly being in the process of conducting business for the USCCB. And the upshot of the whole thing is that he was using this, or so the allegation goes, for these assignations with homosexual men. So there are five details here that Father Raymond D'Souza brings up in an article that he wrote, 5 points to consider with regard to this particular story. I want to share that with you. I also want to share a little bit more with you when we get back from this break about the bigger picture here. This is now something that the Archdiocese of Newark, New Jersey has taken up, and they're doing an investigation. And there's some data involving that archdiocese that has been made public and including by the archdiocese itself. But here's what Father Raymond D'Souza says. He says the priest in question, the Monsignor in question, resigned after this Catholic News website gathered data that showed his mobile phone was used to access this gay dating app that puts users in contact with others in the same location desiring anonymous encounters. This app bills itself as, quote, the largest social media network for gay, bi, trans, and queer people. This news organization, The Pillar, obtained the tracking data, which is commercially available and is gathered by the app, and users give the app permission to track them in order to find available partners nearby. So The Pillar concluded that the tracking data constituted evidence of a pattern of sexual misconduct. It de-anonymized the data to show that this priest in question was using the app in various places, including a gay bathhouse in Las Vegas. Their methods are not illegal, but have raised ethical concerns. Critics of this news organization did not coincide neatly with conservative progressive divisions on other issues. And he gives a series of different people who raised criticism about how this was done. The investigation of this priest only established the use of the gay dating app, not that he engaged in any immoral encounters. However, that seems to be the likely possibility based upon these allegations. He made no statement about the reporting this would be the priest in question, nor the implication that he was for several years engaged in an ongoing pattern of these casual encounters. So Father D'Souza says, especially in the age of digital tracking and omnipresent security cameras, a priest has extra reasons to be faithful to the requirements of Christian discipleship and his priestly promises. Not only is God watching, there is also more routine surveillance, too. Chancery officials who investigate allegations of sexual abuse increasingly report that surveillance photographs and videos are part of the case file. Then he gets into the issue of private life versus secret life, asking the question, was this priest's privacy breached? That is the question put by those who claim that this investigation violated journalistic norms. A priest is entitled to a private life, but not a secret life, much less a double life. It is not a distinction easy to define. Where a priest goes on vacation may well be part of his private life, no business of his parishioners. That privacy does not entitle him, though, to secrecy about behavior contrary to priestly life. Keep in mind, this is a priest who's writing this. And I'll continue with what he has to say on the other side of this quick timeout that's coming in just a minute. He says, the priest's case is a relatively easier case as no one defends the behavior the surveillance revealed. There is no reason for a priest to use that app. It facilitates behavior all moral traditions condemn as immoral, and not only for clergy. But there will be more difficult cases, and the concerns raised by the critics will require some careful thinking. Where does a private life become a secret life? Alcohol, gambling, drugs, lavish spending, or aspects of pastoral life that might take one into gray areas of the law, such as working with youth enticed by gangs. So when we return, I'll continue with what Father D'Souza has to say regarding five things to consider about this story of the Monsignor who was brought down, or who resigned at the very least as a result of this reporting using the gay dating app, the allegation goes, and what does that mean? And that gets into other questions like, well, who else might be on this list? The Archdiocese of Newark, for its part, is investigating upwards of 10 possibilities, and I'll share that with you as well. This is a story that probably has much bigger ramifications than people realize at the moment. And we will talk about that and much more on the other side of this quick timeout. Please stay right there. I'll be back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.